Good morning. We'll call the Sussex County Council meeting of May 5th, 2015 to order. The first thing is the approval of the agenda. Mr. Lawson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Good morning, members. I have one amendment to the agenda. We can strike approval of minutes.
Entertained a motion to approve the agenda as amended?
Got it.
Yeah.
Motion, Mr. Wilson. Second, Mrs. Deaver. Any questions? We'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Arlett?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Reading of correspondence, Mr. Moore?
I have none, Mr. President.
Any correspondence from council? Public comment. Mr. Guy, if you would check our sign up, see if I made a public comment today. Thank you, sir. Barb Girk.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning. I'm Barb Girk, president of Sea Pines Village Homeowner Association. By representing not only our community, but a consortium of 25 communities, some 2,500 households in the area regarding the recent decision by Judge Brady, specifically the special use exception for a 100 Southwood Tower application by AT&T. I'm not here to point fingers. I'm here to make a statement. Judge Brady has not modified but changed the outcome of the decision. Judge Brady has exceeded her legal authority by reweighing the evidence and retrying the case, something that case law cannot do by her own admission. Please review the case by Judge Graves, who outlined the authority and who properly reviewed the case. For the county to allow this would totally gut the discretion of the board in cases, as the court would and could come in and change a verdict at will. The county has no other responsible option but to appeal the improper decision to the Delaware Supreme Court. It is beyond Judge Brady's power to reweigh evidence. One key point that Judge Brady made was that best service was only achieved after the temporary tower was erected. We submitted evidence that the best coverage was advertised by AT&T prior to the erection of the tower, but Judge Brady would not have known that with the Clips version of the six-year-long case. We submitted an abundance of evidence that Judge Brady failed to review, as she exceeded her authority by reweighing evidence, the sole responsibility of the board. Judge Brady committed legal error by reweighing evidence. Judge Brady also went against a recent U.S. Supreme Court ruling, T-Mobile versus the City of Roswell. The court made clear that a municipality's decision of denial of a cell tower application can take any form as long as it is simply in writing. It does not have to be in a particular form and can be a short statement with a reason of denial. That being said, the system is not working. With all due respect to the Board of Adjustment members, in cases such as cell towers, a county-assigned engineering board should be investigating and reporting back to the Board of Adjustment or Council for review. Trusting a paid witness from a corporation is ludicrous. The Engineering Advisory Board should visit the site, review the plans, have all approvals by DENREC and other approvals needed, and submit the findings to the board for review. This would help the board make an educated decision and eliminate what we have seen here. Other municipalities have done this, and cost-wise, this would save the county many taxpayer dollars. The last Supreme Court hearing in this case, Sea Pines Village paid for legal costs as a result of an error of the county to ensure that we protect our homes, our lives, and investments. We, the citizens of Sussex County, including Sea Pines Village, the Action Committee of 2,500 homeowners, and the BBLA, ask the county to gather the pieces and to make sure that justice has been served by appealing this erroneous decision to the Delaware Supreme Court. We ask that no construction of a tower be done until this appeal process is over, as this is the very reason we are here today. I want to thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Dan Kramer.
My name is Dan Kramer. Don't we have a contract with somebody out of Kent County to strictly do dogs? And if we do, why is there two figures out there, one over $600,000, the other is over $700,000? And on top of that, we're paying them to strictly do dogs, right? They're not supposed to do anything but dogs, if I'm correct. Then how come are they down here harassing horse owners? That's what I want to know. And if they're using our money for that purpose, something needs to change.
Thank you, sir. We're going to change up the regular order of business for a minute or two here and ask Mr. Godwin to come forward. I wanted to talk about one particular bill. And good morning, Representative Dukes. You want to come on forward too, sir? Glad to have you with us today. I know you got to get to Dover, so we'd like to get you guys talk first, and then we'll go back to the board of business. Mr. Godwin.
Thank you, Mr. President, members of council. We have the honor of State Representative Tim Dukes with us this morning, who is the co-sponsor of a bill that he would like us to weigh in on, House Bill 87. The synopsis of this bill is rather short. It says, this act allows each municipality and each county to create right-to-work zones. I'll let him explain.
It's about a year and a half ago. First of all, thank you, council, for indulging in allowing me to be here today. But a year and a half ago, I traveled to the state of Tennessee for a conference, and I was met there with legislators from all over the country, and one of the topics of discussion was right-to-work initiative, right-to-work legislation and laws. I found out very quickly after being there that Tennessee was a right-to-work state, and I was amazed as I was there for this conference and the different things that I found out about how right-to-work has impacted the state of Tennessee, while most of the country was suffering during our recent downfall of the economy. Tennessee responded much quicker than just about every state, and they've had a tremendous turn in the economic status of their state because of right to work. Right to work simply is a law that guarantees that no person is compelled as a condition of employment to join or not to join or to pay dues to a union. This comes out of the Taft-Hartley Act. And there are 25 states that have signed on or have enacted right-to-work legislation. And the most notable of states that would be looked at is probably what we would think of as high union states would be Nevada, Iowa, and Michigan. But these states still maintain about 4.5 million union jobs, so it hasn't had an impact on that. But when I look at the state of Delaware, we have lost over the last 16, 18 years, we've lost about 26,000 manufacturing jobs. It has been a tremendous, I think, downfall of our state in losing manufacturing. I believe because of our corporate law that we have for business tax laws, our court system, and also our higher education from University of Delaware, Wilmington University, Dell State, Wesley, Dell Tech. We have a workforce here that can move very quickly, that can adopt and adapt in situations. I believe that right to work gives us an opportunity to bring in manufacturing jobs that may not, without right to work, may not even look to Delaware. Especially, I think it can really impact Sussex County. I'm sure we've all heard that Volvo recently contacted the state of Delaware about an interest of bringing a Volvo plant here. And the first question they had was, are you a right-to-work state? And when the answer was given no, the conversation ended and there's been no more contact. And so this legislation, it doesn't mandate that a town or a county does this, but it's empowering legislation. It gives the county or a town the power to decide that local government. And I think after being in this for about 3 years, I think it's very clearly shortly into this that I understood that the county council does not want the state mandating a lot of things, nor would I want that in reverse. Can I get an amen on that?
Amen.
Amen.
But this gives the county and a town flexibility. For instance, if the town of Seaford wanted to declare the old DuPont plant, that property, they wanted to declare that a right-to-work zone, that may bring new opportunities to Seaford. And so this simply gives local municipalities and counties the ability to create a right-to-work zone. So,
questions of council?
Yeah, well,
we have a question. Was it going to spill?
Such a good speech, I couldn't even keep my coffee in a cup.
Looks like you may have got it wet.
I think so.
I think she's had too much coffee.
I had too much.
Ask your question. We'll take care of that.
Okay, we'll get paper towels.
All right. So you're saying you feel that the fact that, I almost forgot what I was going to say there. You feel that having unions anywhere at all is going to stifle industrial jobs. Is that what happened in Seaford with the DuPont?
No. I did not say that unions would stifle jobs.
Okay. So I'm getting the opposite opinion, though, that you feel like more would come here if we would make ourselves a right-to-work state, though.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right.
I think the trend, when you look at the 25 states, the economy of Tennessee, Florida, and Texas, who are all right-to-work states, I think creates an environment that is sometimes much more welcoming.
For who? The employer.
For the state itself.
The state employer?
Yes.
The state employer.
Yes.
Not private employers?
No, I meant employers within the state.
See, I'm considering the workers, too.
Okay.
Because I represent all of them. And that's why I'm asking these questions. And, what about public utilities and roads and bridges? Who would build those? Would that be union people or not, if we were right to work?
In looking at the bill in lines 13 to 19, there are some things that are exempt from that. This would not have an impact on the state building roads.
It would not.
It would not.
I bet bridges would not. You still have skilled workers,
yes,
building bridges. Okay.
This is for county and for municipalities. And
we don't build bridges.
You don't build bridges or roads.
That's right. That's right. Okay, I'm just, I'm going to, the first thing that came to mind is that, yes, the economy is terrible, and yes, we have very few, industrial jobs, but that's true of the country. It's not just us. And I don't see where we are in such a terrible position that we have to sacrifice workers' pay to try to make it right. I don't agree with it.
Representative Dukes, when she says we're sacrificing workers' pay, we must remember, anytime these people does a public job for us, we're paying it. The taxpayers are paying this bill. And so if we keep raising up, that means we get lesser done. That's just what it boils down to, and have lesser people work. So I sometimes see, I think it's not the only problem we have. We are overloaded with regulations. They are killing us. Our number one industry in this county is poultry, farming. And you go to get anything done, it's like $20,000 to get a permit now from soil conservation. That's ridiculous. And it's cost you time. That guy gets ready to build four houses. He's got $2 million tied up. And when would he ever make $2 million back? That's gone ridiculous. And I think, I read this morning that this state has the highest taxes of any state. What is it called? It's hidden taxes. See, they say, we come to Delaware, you want to pay no taxes. Well, that's on the front part. But on the back part, our taxes are really higher than the other state. And I think I'm somewhere in the line of this thinking. Would you say that?
I can't verify that.
Okay, I was on my computer this morning. I read it this morning before I sit down here. That this state pays the highest taxes of any state. Although we wouldn't think not. But maybe that's part of our problem. We need to look at taxes and regulations. Those two things are killing us.
I will respond to the issue of regulations. I've been very involved with DENREC, with the with issues with agriculture, and also home building lots, also with the conservation district. Right. And they are working, trying to make some concessions so that this process would not be held up when someone is trying to build a home on a private lot or agriculture building chicken houses. So this is something that I've been engaged in, and even looking at offering legislation if Denrec doesn't make some decisions soon to change the regulations.
Well, they're trying to pass a regulation now, and it's coming at us, that anybody building individual homes has got to have stormwater ponds. And anybody in the right mind knows that digging a hole.
Get back on this.
I know, we'll go back. Yeah. Well, we're talking about how to help this, county and how to help this state. These are some that I think right to work is up on the list. But we also need to look at regulations and taxes. And our regulations that we continue passing every day, thinking we're doing the good for the public. But the public is really, in a lot of ways, are not knowledgeable enough to know that they've been hoodwinked.
I can just say I've spent several hours the last month in dealing with some of these regulations and trying to bring change and trying to encourage Denrec to make the changes on their own without us having to offer legislation to do that.
Well, I think that's good, and I also think this. I believe the House should take back control and say what can go up or down when it comes to money. As it is in the past, it's been turned over to Denrec. And whatever they want, the rules they want to make, or whatever tax they want to do, they can do it without even the consent of the people that we have elected to go there to represent us.
Any more questions, Councilman? Mr. Arlett.
Representative Dukes, first and foremost, thank you for being here. It is an honor to have you here. I know your father was our previous president, and we are grateful to have you here today. And I also would commend you for taking on the courage, if you would, in the state of Delaware, to bring this and be a part of this process in Dover. I do believe it takes some courage to cross that grain. And one thing that I have not heard as of yet here this morning or even previously in my readings through Right to Work is, what about the rights of the people? I think that is the most important process of all, is we should be a right to choose state. The choice should lie with that of the employee. End of story. If they choose to be a part of a union or not, it should be up to them. And so for anybody to say otherwise, they forgot what country we live in. Mm. They forgot that this is a country of the power needs to be placed with the people and not any other organization. And I've heard that this is a union-busting opportunity. Well, you know what? How about an opportunity for somebody to provide for their own family? That is a busting of that. Where is that in this discussion? There are families in Sussex County that are desperate and have great needs and would love the opportunity to work. But yet the opportunities are not being presented because some people out of Dover and some people that are attempting to stronghold their pocketbooks, okay, and are forgetting about the people. And so I want to commend you for that. I think that you should continue the fight. I do believe that, from what I have gathered, that this effort has stalled in committee up at the Senate. And I know 2 weeks ago, maybe there's something updated on that, but 2 weeks ago I brought before this council and in our legal council to provide some guidance as it relates to Sussex County voting for presenting itself the opportunity to have a right to work county. And I have done a little research on that, and there is precedence in the country. And I have reached out to several organizations. I know right now it's very hot and heavy in the state of Kentucky. Whereas they have several counties in Kentucky have passed right to work legislation from within their own county. These are counties that are bordering Tennessee. These are counties of Fulton, Hardin, Simpson, Todd, and Warren. They have passed right to work counties at the county level. And so this discussion is not over yet. If the folks out of Dover can understand common sense here, we perhaps here at the county level can. We are closest to the people in Sussex County. We know what's best for our residents. And I would agree with you that we have to continue this discussion because in the end, it's about the people. Why shouldn't they not have the opportunity to choose what they believe is best for themselves and their families? So thank you for being here.
Thank you. It was good to be here.
Yes, I have
Mr. Cole, you have something?
Mr. Cole.
I'll just put my two cents in. Right, I think there's evidence that right to work legislation does work. It's been effective in many states. And I may be wrong, but I think, aren't there a majority of the states now right-to-work states?
25.
Well, it's dead even then. Okay, we're at the halfway mark, which I think is a good indicator. It's not a minority, but it's about 50-50. So anything we can do in the state of Delaware that would encourage manufacturing jobs, and I believe this is a good tool. It would give us a tool to work. I can't believe Republican, Democrat, anybody should be against it. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's anything benefits, and I think I'm with Rob on if we have the ability to do it at the county level, we ought to consider it.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I have a
Anything
question.
Else, Mrs. Deaver?
Isn't there a forgiveness of gross receipts tax for a short time? That's not part of
on
it.
On this bill.
No.
That's been taken out.
What you're referring to, Councilman Arlette, was a Senate bill from Greg Lavelle that stalled in committee.
Mm-hmm.
That empowered DEDO, Department of Economic Development Office, to consider something.
Mm-hmm.
This is completely separate of that. This is a House bill. I'm the sponsor in the House. Senator Gerald Hawker is the sponsor in the Senate. And this just simply empowers counties and municipalities to declare or create right-to-work zones.
Does it affect people who are not citizens?
That are not citizens?
Yeah, that are working here.
Well, that's against the law, isn't it?
I'm just asking, does it affect people? Do they have to be citizens? Who are we talking about?
I think you would have to be to get a legal job.
You have
to be documented.
We have a lot of new workers, and I'm wondering how this works for them. I have to think about that and look at that. I'm seeing one side of government and business that wants the workers to be paid less, and the other side is the workers represented by unions, and I think they should have a right to be represented, and I think they should have a right to negotiate, and if the government and business can't handle that, I'd be very surprised.
Anything else from council?
I just want to thank Representative Dukes again for being here and continuing with the effort in Dover, and we would be prayerful for your efforts.
Yep.
And anything we can do from our perspective to assist in your endeavor, we would love to.
And that's the dose for me also.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming today, sir.
All right.
And you're welcome anytime to come back and join us.
It's been a real honor to be here.
Pleasure.
Thank you for the broadband bill that's getting done. It's being installed. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You've done more for Sussex County than I have seen done in years. Thank you so much.
It's important that we all work together. Thank you, Council.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Brown, we'll revert back to you in other record.
Okay, I just wanted to say that there will likely be a hearing sometime soon on this bill that we're talking about, Senate House Bill 87. And at that hearing, it would be nice if I would be able to testify on your behalf as to what county council, whether you support this bill or not. So I would just give you that thought.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you, sir.
Good idea.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Lawson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Moving back up the agenda, the next item of business is a presentation of Memorial Poppy. We're joined today by members of the American Legion Post 28 Auxiliary. Please come forward. Welcome. Thank you for being here.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I am Liz Shepherd, Poppy Chairman of Unit 28, Post 28.
Yay, Post
28. And I have with me today Paris Parks, Miss Poppy.
Miss Poppy.
Oh.
Wow. Welcome.
The second year
in
a row.
His grandkids call him Poppy.
And she's here to present Poppies to the County Council.
That's very nice.
Poppies for Poppy.
Poppy for Poppy. What a deal.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
And the purpose of the poppies is?
Is in remembrance of.
Do we have a check for them? Or
our fallen
Gina's
veterans.
Not here.
Right.
Probably.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. We're good. Is Robin?
No, we don't have one.
Never mind.
We don't have a check for them today, do we?
No, it's on our agenda. I explained to them that it's on the agenda today.
And if you noticed, I'm wearing red felt. The auxiliary's been making them for the last 3 months. And the ladybug in the middle represents our state bug. And Paris is going to represent it to the ladies.
Thank you so much. You prepare boxes of supplies and food and send them to the military. Is that not right?
Yes. Once a month, we send packages. We pack at the...
volunteer work.
Yes.
Yes.
Everything is volunteer, yes.
Thank you.
The post and the unit would not be able to run without volunteers.
Thank you.
Thank you. Have a nice afternoon.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you for all you do.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next item of business, we're having a presentation by Chris Basin, Executive Director for the Center for Inland Bays. Chris is here to talk about the James Farm Master Plan and give us an update. Welcome, Chris. Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning, sir. Good morning, members of council. Pleasure to be here. Thank you for the opportunity to present today. I'm the Executive Director with the Delaware Center for the Inland Bays, And we are a private nonprofit organization dedicated to the protection and restoration of Little Assawoman Bay, Rehoboth Bay, and Indian River Bay. Mm. We accomplish our mission through restoration projects for water quality, through scientific research and education on the environment, and also through education. And a big part of our education program is the James Farm, and that's what I'd like to talk to you about today. I have a presentation over here. The James Farm Preserve pictured here is 150 acres located on both sides of Cedar Neck Road just north of the town of Ocean View. And you can see this from the air looking from Indian River Bay. It's a very unique preserve because in that small 150 acres, it has a wide variety of ecosystems that are characteristics of our region. It has beautiful upland forests. It has a coastal plain pond. It has beautiful salt marshes and freshwater wetlands. It has warm season grasslands, a large tidal flat on the estuary, and perhaps one of the most beautiful bay beaches on all of the inland bays. The farm has an interesting history, and it was actually donated to the people of Sussex County by Mary Lighthype in 1992. And it was donated to be a place of natural recreation and education for the people of Sussex County. And shown here is the James family. That's the patriarch of the family, Joshua James, also members of the Short family there. Mary's vision, I think, was second to none. She knew that this area would rapidly develop, and now the farm is one of the last undeveloped places in this part of the county. In 1998, the county and the center entered into a private-public partnership to manage the farm for education and recreation. And that effort was led by the center's Jim Alderman. Jim spent a lot of time restoring over 50 acres of forest and grassland to the property. He erected educational pavilions, put in boardwalks and viewing platforms for wildlife. And we also have an education program out at the farm that we started in 2003. And this is another unique private partnership between the center and the Indian River School District. Every year, 1,000 seventh and eighth graders have a full day of curriculum-aligned education outdoors at the farm. And this is what happens. These kids are seining here. They're learning about the fish of the estuary. They also learn about ecological diversity and how organisms adapt to environmental stresses. They learn about water quality. And they learn about how they can, in their own lives, protect the inland bays. For a lot of kids in this area, it's one of the only times that they get to go and see the water just because their families don't have means to get there. And we have found that over time doing this program, some of these kids, this one day at the farm, influences their decisions to go on into a career for environmental conservation or other jobs that benefit the environment. The farm is managed by an employee of the center. This is Bobby Collins here. He spends half his time managing the preserve, and he's supported by a loyal cadre of volunteers shown here. They take care of the grounds there, the general management. And last year, these fellows put in 262 hours of volunteer work that really helps with our budget down at the farm. The farm is very well visited. Over 10,000 visits are made to the farm every year for recreation, to enjoy the bay beach, to walk the trails, bird watch, to clam, to fish. And this is a picture of one of our docents took. On summer weekends, they'll be down there at the beach just teaching regular people that show up about what's in the water, what are these organisms on the tidal flat that they're seeing. And the people love it. It's a big deal for them. Now, to give you an idea about the level of service that we offer down there, 10,000 visits a year, well, that's 40% more than Holt's Landing State Park has received. And Holt's Landing State Park is a comparable park on Indian River Bay. So we also offer a lot of other activities at the farm. This is a picture of our horseshoe crab monitoring. It's an all-volunteer program. And these people, since 2008, have tracked the population of spawning horseshoe crabs on the Bay Beach, which is an important area for them. We offer a concessionaire. This is Eco Bay Kayaking Adventures. This is their 11th year of offering kayak tours, stand-up paddleboarding tours, and kids camps out of the beach. This is an image of our native plant sale that we just wrapped up last year. The native plant sale is a community event held at the farm where people come out and they learn about how native plants are good for the environment, good for wildlife, while at the same time we have 5 garden centers that are there selling plants. So these are just a couple of ways that the center is good for the local economy as well. So we do have our challenges at the preserve, and this is an image from a few years ago of our parking lot on a typical early spring weekend. As you can see, with the population growth of the area, our facilities have outgrown their capacity for the people that are coming. I think since we started managing the property, the county's population has grown by 35%, and it's projected another 35% by 2030. So this growth is projected to continue. There are some other challenges that we have in the preserve. When it was first thought through, it was kind of put in piecemeal, and that has resulted in some growing pains over time. For example, the education area seen here in our activity campus is right next to the restoration storage area, which is right next to the maintenance area. And these are functions that would probably be better separated. We've run out of space to store some of the equipment we need to manage the farm. You see, we have to store this in our educational pavilion. And some of our facilities over time have become old and received a little bit of vandalism. Also, you see here when electric came in, they put the box right next to the main trail. And that's not the kind of thing you want to do for an immersive nature experience. So there's some improvements that can be made. Last year, we decided to address this, and we were very fortunate to receive the support of a bunch of agencies, including Sussex County Council, University of Delaware, the State of Delaware, and EPA, to contract with Oasis Design, a consultant firm out of Baltimore, to develop a master plan for the farm. And you might know Oasis through their work at the Indian River Inlet Marina and the new campground there. They do very good work. The purpose of our plan was to accommodate this increasing visitation while protecting the environment and enhancing visitors' experience as well as education opportunities at the preserve. Doing this, we knew it was very important to get public input. The farm is for the public, and we wanted to get the people to use it the most to offer their ideas on what the future should look like. So we held a workshop here at a South Coastal Library, and the message from the public was clear. For the most part, people wanted the preserve to stay wild, protect it, and keep it for nature and keep it for recreation. So we integrated that into the plan. Now, the plan covers everything from how to manage all these ecosystems on the site to how to handle the increased growth that the preserve will experience. An important element is the gateway, and that's what you see here. This is the concept design for the gateway, and some parts of this are a parking lot, which will hold 27 spaces, which will accommodate the increased parking needs. Also, a special spot for the school groups to park the school bus when they're dropping off and picking up kids. We moved our event lawn into the woods so that it would be protected from the winds that blow off the coast oftentimes. And the consultant provided this view, a nice wildflower meadow with a native tree arboretum that looks directly down onto the educational activity area so that when children are exiting the bus, they have a direct line of sight as to where they're going and what they're doing, and the teachers can keep an eye on them at all times. In the activity area, we did separate the educational facilities from the maintenance facilities and provided adequate storage for the concessionaire, the maintenance, as well as the restoration opportunities that we have at the farm. The consultant is recommending that when we build our buildings to replace the existing facilities, we focus on a local agricultural aesthetic so that we preserve the heritage of the farm and the heritage of Sussex. And this is an example of what some of those structures might look like redone. We are going to have a permanent compostable toilet facility to replace our rented porta potty that we have now. And we've also been recommended to have some gateway elements on the east side of the road of the farm to introduce visitors to come and explore the warm season grasslands and salt marshes. Right now, people don't go over to the east side too much, so we want to show them that and disperse the visitation around. We have an educational signage plan where 18 signs will be placed throughout the preserve to interpret the different plants, animals, and ecosystems, as well as water quality on the site. And our trail system has also been redefined to be more user-friendly in a series of three loops. There's also provisions made to replace boardwalks that were damaged by Hurricane Sandy and add new boardwalks where places have gotten wetter over time. Finally, the consultant provided us with a phasing plan, which we revised to suit our needs. And we have phased in the implementation into three separate phases. What we're pursuing right now is the construction design and permitting for the entire site, and then we hope to have that done by the fall and winter of the winter of 2016, and then we'll go into phase one construction next year in 2016. So we're doing our fundraising for that now. Our vision for this preserve overall is to maintain the most well-managed preserve in the state of Delaware, where the natural environment is protected and explained through unique educational signage and the programming that we offer, and that increased visitation is accommodated, but within the protection of the environment. And we want this plan to develop the resources in advance of their needs so that we're not having a rundown preserve, but one that is something that we can all be proud of at all times for the county. So I just wanted to say thank you to the county for its support of the preserve over time. I think we have a very wonderful public-private partnership. Things have run very well with us. And I can tell you, as somebody that lives in Ocean View right next to the preserve, and I'm sure George can tell you this as well, it's a special place. It is a community at the preserve. It's a place where people can learn about nature and appreciate it, and it is also a community asset. It's an economic asset, and it's an environmental asset. So we look forward to maintaining that partnership with you all, and I'd be happy to take any of you all down to the preserve to see it and show you a copy of the master plan. So that concludes my presentation, and thank you very much for the opportunity.
Thank you. Question to Council, yeah. Mr. Yeah, Cole.
Thank you. I got a couple here. Like I do live right down the street, and it is a unique place. I know people that go every day. Is there any interest in interconnecting with the state park? Because this park of the county, this county land, will abut state park land. Is there any interconnection possibilities there? Because that would tie this 150 acres into what 450 plus or minus acres.
Right, Fresh Pond State Park is right next door. Unfortunately, there wouldn't be an easy way to connect those two parks because of the marshland and water in between them. Okay. However, we are in talks with the state parks folks and coordinating how we do and redefine our trail system on the farm can kind of match how they're doing it at the Asawoman Canal and the Fresh Pond State Park. But there are opportunities for water trails, of course, that would link the two of them in the future.
Okay. Second one would be the pasture point. The actual point is eroding. Is there any plans to try to stop the erosion of that, because that may affect the whole dynamics of the cove?
Currently,
no.
It's a good question about Pasture Point, and it's one that's been posed before. Is the erosion of Pasture Point affecting the erosion of the beach? And it's important to realize that most of our beaches on the inland bays are highly erosional, so that's a natural process. It would be good to have a study to see if we could take a look at how we could manage Pasture Point to slow that erosion. Right now, the management technique is just to allow the natural erosion of the coast and keep moving our facilities back as we have done there over time.
All right. And I guess, and how many acres would this master plan affect? Of the 150 acres, it appeared it wasn't much, but I was just curious how many acres will be impacted by the plan.
I would say most of the work occurs within, it's probably a 15-acre area at the very front, which is the entryway and the activity area. However, we'll be managing all of our trails and replacing boardwalks on both sides of the preserve.
I'm sure it contributes to the value of land surrounding it.
Absolutely.
I mean, you have some idea. I don't think you went out and wrote it all down, but do you have some idea of what value that is? I would imagine it's.
That's an excellent question. I wish I did have figures like that. I know there are a number of studies that have been done nationwide to show how public areas increase the value of land. I don't have exact figures, but I can tell you the people that live around it are sure of that.
It's a real asset. Thank you so much.
Mr. Arlett?
Yes, Chris, thank you for being here, first and foremost. Appreciate it. Could we go back to the financial?
Mm-hmm.
There we go. Let's talk a little bit about that, if we could. The other one, the one with the numbers.
Oh, excuse me.
There we go. Where can you share before the council here, where are you in this process regarding these numbers as far as funds that are committed, funds that have been allocated? Can you share a little bit more detail regarding this?
Yes.
Please.
Right now, we're in the development phase for construction design and permitting, and we're talking with the Land and Water Conservation Trust Fund of the state. That's been set up to help municipalities and counties do exactly this, remanage their trail systems and their parks. So we're looking at two levels of development for this year. The first would be getting the construction design and permitting done, and the second would be getting the construction design and permitting done and the phase one done in one fundraising round. So we're looking to work with the private community as well and anyone else who's interested in supporting this.
And then down at the bottom there, I'm actually just now noticing it further, and it is highlighted there for a reason. So could you elaborate a little bit on that? Those next, you know, phase one, phase two, and then the educational signage, you've got a little asterisk down at the bottom there. It includes 25% contingency. So, could you share a little bit about that?
Sure. That includes a contingency cost of 25%, which is typical for projects like these. But within that contingency is including potential grant requirement to pay for state prevailing wages. So if the Land and Water Conservation Trust Fund was to grant us funds, with that money and anything that we would match it with, we would have to pay labor the state prevailing wage rates, which are tend to be high.
We know.
And I don't know anything else about that.
Well, you know what? Mike Izzo, our county engineer, has faced that on many of our projects. Yeah. And maybe he could sit down with you and discuss maybe some other ways to be flexible with that, because sometimes breaking the contracts down to smaller contracts or whatever, but there may be ways to avoid that additional 25%, which is, again, can get quite pricey.
Thank you.
Legislation forcing us, and I think we just had Mr. Dukes here kind of talking about something similar, but here's another good example of just something is being imposed on us from outside that is unnecessary.
I can say, in my personal opinion, the rates are astounding, and I'd appreciate any help, you know, on how to deal with that.
Right.
So. Well, it is the taxpayers' dollars in this sense. So how is that being responsible for if we're wasting it?
Which you haven't got a choice over right now.
I just thought I'd share the comment, that's all.
Mr. Wilson, you have any comments?
The first thing you came on and said it's a James Farm. Well, when you keep tearing down these old barns and putting up modern barns and structures, the first thing I'm looking at, it's not like an old farm anymore. You're replacing the old farm, the old barns, and putting on something modern. When I travel Washington or wherever, they restore the old buildings. And you know you're walking to the old George Washington house or the whatever. Here, the way it's going now, the way it looks to me, that I won't be able to find the James Farm, because you're going to be of a more modernistic approach here to me.
Sure, I understand your point. On the portion of the farm that we manage right now, there are no actual old agricultural buildings. I guess the picture that I showed there was an example of the architecture of the agricultural heritage in our area. So we would actually be replacing our old sheds with structures that tried to resemble that more to preserve the heritage, and I very much value that.
Yeah, I didn't see the picture you showed us was certainly as modern as I can get, at least in my opinion. How many paid employees is there that works for this farm?
There is one half of a full-time employee.
One and a half?
One half.
One half.
One half. One half. He's a funny looking individual.
The best half.
Good answer.
Scares people when they see it.
Okay.
Fine. Thank you for coming.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Appreciate it.
And quickly, wait, Chris. We are going to acquire sometime in the future an additional, 5 acres? And the original, Sam, the original old farmhouse will be acquired in the future, but Mrs. Lighthite gave some lifetime rights to an individual at this point.
That's right, correct. Yes, that's correct.
And that house is approximately, we showed the family. Mm-hmm. What is the age of that house approximately? Does anybody know?
I have been told that it goes back to 1700s. It is a gorgeous, it's a very, very unique and gorgeous house, yep.
We used to work on motorcycles in the living room.
We're talking here about the county councils helping them. And it went, wow.
Why did this happen?
Somebody at the farm's calling him.
Yeah. I was telling you your time's up.
I'm telling my time. But made me lose my train of thought.
That might be my time to go.
What you don't know is he dialed your number. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Chris.
I think you had someone else do it.
Have a great day. Thank you. Mr. Lawson.